The following program is paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, True Wealth, presented by Little John Financial Services. Here are David Littlejohn and Katie Shook with True Wealth on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Hey, we made it.
You need to stop talking to other people in the studio and talk to our listeners.
We had a warm up, and welcome to the True Wealth Show. I am your host, Dave Littlejohn, and joining me in studio...
You know, just being mean to you, I guess, today, Katie Shook.
Oh, well, they're not mean.
I'm not mean to him. You know, it's fun to come to the studio because it's not our daily office. So we get to see people that we get to see on a weekly basis and say hi. And we have friendships here. So sure. It's nice to kind of, you know, check in, run around, give everybody high fives. You know how that goes.
Yep. So it's Tuesday. I know it's the favorite Tuesday you've had all week. We have it's a special Tuesday. I'm told to make this announcement. By our marketing people.
Oh, it's right? A special Tuesday?
Right, because tomorrow will be a special Wednesday.
I know what tomorrow is.
Sure.
It's Podcast Wednesday.
It's a national podcast day. Right? And this show becomes a podcast tomorrow. So right now, it's a live broadcast. Tomorrow, it's a recorded podcast.
Yeah. So we are going to be celebrating Podcast Day by posting our own podcast.
If you're listening to this right now on the podcast, here's what I'll tell you. We already recorded this, so it's history now. But it's, you know, history can often be relevant and informative. And we're going to cover subject matter today that I think is what it's, I call this evergreen content.
Okay.
Right.
What does that mean? I mean, people throw around that word all the time, it's evergreen.
Timely means that it's relevant to the time right now. And an evergreen stuff is things that it stays relevant, right? You can come back a year later and the same information should still be valuable.
There you go.
Okay. So
I always think of like a plant that they deem evergreen, right? Like it's something that doesn't really.
Well, evergreen plants just don't lose their leaves.
Right.
Right. So you have deciduous and coniferous.
Oh, look at you busting out the geek speak already.
Right, so deciduous trees are the ones that have that shed their leaves.
And that's all David knows about plants.
Do not, and they have cone-bearing plants, right?
I'm just kidding. I said that's all right. David knows about plants. There you go.
No, but I sounded for a moment like I might know more. Right?
Either that or you've been listening to somebody else on talk radio here.
Nope, I have not because generally speaking, we are at work at this time. And so is this work? Sure,
it's more like
technically,
play,
it's
even
play
though it's
for me. I love sharing.
Technically work.
Mm-hmm. So what are we going to talk about today? I have a trick question for everybody.
Okay? Ooh, I like trick questions.
Not really a trick question, but maybe a rhetorical one. Okay, ready?
Okay.
Ta-da.
You ready?
What is a financial plan?
That sounds like that should be. No, but that sounds like it should be a straightforward question. Like, oh, a financial plan is blah, blah, blah.
And here's my answer. Do you want what should a financial plan be or what is a financial plan often?
Hold on. We're going to do this really quick because it's fun to do it on the air.
Okay.
Hey, Siri, what is a financial plan? Let's see what Siri says. Oh, sorry. My guy's an Australian too, by the way. So it makes my Siri even more fun. So Siri says, in general usage, a financial plan is a comprehensive evaluation of an individual's current pay and future financial state by using current known variables to predict future income, asset values, and withdrawal plans. This often includes a budget, which organizes an individual's finances and sometimes includes a series of steps or specific goals for spending and saving in the future. That's according to Wikipedia.
Yep.
That sounded very boring and
for the dictionary,
yeah.
Right?
Hooray, Siri found Wikipedia. All right.
And, you know, Siri's not wrong, but I think that, first of all, financial planner, these are terms that conjure. I mean, it's like you kind of want to throw up in your mouth a little bit, right? It's just, it's so abused in the industry. There we go again.
Hold on. Let me get it back.
I know. It's just nasty because it doesn't have any meaning anymore and everybody throws it around. And part of this is I get a chip on my shoulder, right? You know, after going through the whole curriculum and sitting through exotic testing and having to do continuing ed every year to have to be a certified financial planner, which is a credentialed
position, also known as a CFP.
Right. So the CFP is something that you have to maintain. There is a code of ethics that you must follow. There is a protocol that you're expected to follow. And you become, by definition, holding yourself out as a CFP, a fiduciary, okay,
right.
Which has a higher standard of care for your clients. And then you have people that say, well, I'm a financial planner. And they're like an insurance agent or something like that. And I go, well, that's kind of a stretch.
But are you?
You're doing part of a financial plan. It's like as a retirement planner. Okay, well, that's part of a retirement or a financial plan. But there's just so much more to it. So here's what I think happens. You know what a financial plan ends up being most of the time?
I'm waiting for this really creative answer.
Yeah, a sales tool for people to try to extract money from their customers.
See, I wasn't thinking that at all. I was thinking a financial plan ends up just being like the steps. Like when I was reading the definition, I was like, yep. So I need to be on a budget and the financial plan is the steps to make me $1 million because that's where I want to be.
Right. And so, sure. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that too. But I worry about the wolves in sheep's clothing, right? The practitioners, and I think most people attempt to be decent practitioners, but here's the problem with the financial services industry in general. They're very good at training people in sales.
Yes.
But they're not so good at training people in the practical stuff. Okay,
like
the actual
planning
stuff.
Like, give me an example.
Like understanding the intricacies of distribution planning for a retirement plan. Okay, so if you have an IRA and you're a beneficiary and you're going to inherit an IRA, there's different consequences for how you accept the money.
True.
Right?
Sorry, this is not a true false question.
It's not true false.
No.
It's really how it works.
True.
Is that if you're a beneficiary, and let's say you're a spousal beneficiary, even more tricky at times, right?
Yeah.
Because the spousal beneficiary gets extra options that a non-spouse beneficiary doesn't get.
Well, and I would say if you've ever rolled over money from a 401k to an IRA and you've gotten that packet, right? Like a lot of 401k plans will give you an exit packet and it says, do you want to roll it over into an IRA, roll it over into a Roth IRA? Do you want to take an annuity? Do you want to take a lump sum? Do you want to take a pension? Like, what do you want to do? And everybody goes, excuse me?
Yeah. And maybe you have an idea, maybe you don't. Great. But if somebody just says, oh, I'm a retirement planner, and what they do is they sell annuities. Okay.
Then you're going to end up with an annuity.
That's not a retirement planner, okay? Not in the way I would define it. Because what it is saying, well, this is sometimes a component of a retirement plan. And because it happens to be the product I have, I am not what I'm doing, it's the sin of omission, if you will, right? We're not acknowledging all of the other components. We're just saying, well, it is part of a retirement plan, therefore I'm a retirement planner. That's like saying I'm an auto mechanic, but I only work on the brakes.
That's very specific.
Okay. It's like, so really you're a brake technician.
You're not an auto mechanic. You're
not other parts.
You're
right?
Not doing the holistic planning.
Yeah. So that's the thing. And you know, one could even say, are you a general mechanic where you can work on lots of different types of cars, or do you only work on one brand or you know, it's that sort of, and that's a little bit broader. Okay. But you get the ideas.
Yeah.
Sometimes we make this, I don't say we, the industry, people will hold themselves out as something. And it's really, it's about trying to sound better to the consumer.
Right.
Because, and let's be honest, I mean, a lot of folks, that's how they make a living. Now, I will say right now, there's nothing wrong with making a living that way. It's going to sound like I'm picking on an industry, and I am absolutely not. Most insurance brokers or agents, right? The law says you have to have car insurance to drive. Okay, so you can either go online and you're sort of doing it yourself with the assistance of a computer to find some form of coverage, in which case you choose your own adventure, right? You
right.
pick the company and you are the servicing
But it's
person.
Your job to do the homework.
Okay, and the online service is the broker. Okay, so they're introducing you to the various carriers. You select your coverage. You exchange the money, and it, you know, everything's done. The online broker typically makes the commission off of the transaction. That's why they are there,
right?
To facilitate capturing your money, and they'll oftentimes do it at a lower. Well, it's not that they do it at a lower rate. Usually, it's state regulated, so the commission is the commission is the commission. But that's how it operates: is they make it convenient for you to sit at home
at 11 o'clock at night, searching for car insurance when normal offices are closed.
But you know, an insurance agent right now could be invaluable. Let's say that you know you lost a home in a fire,
which is a very real reality for a lot of people right now.
Right. So let's say you're dealing with that. Having an agent that becomes an advocate of yours and helps you navigate the process can be invaluable.
Right.
Okay. So was it worth the transaction of purchasing insurance and the agent receiving compensation for it? I think it is.
Right.
Right. So I'm not demonizing the profession, but is an insurance agent a financial planner? Not necessarily, right? Are they a risk management expert? Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly what they're doing is they're saying, okay, well, here's the risks in your life. Here's the ones that you can maintain on your own and self-insure, right? Like I'm not going to buy insurance on my bicycle. Okay. if it breaks, it's just like, well, I'll get a new bicycle.
Or on your tractor.
Okay. Well, you might on your tractor. I don't know. But the things that you have to and the things that make sense where it's too expensive to replace it by just self-insuring.
Right.
Then you go and you get the insurance. Okay. I mean, that's why health insurance is important.
Yes.
Right. We don't worry about the cost of the x-ray. You worry about the cost of the surgery.
Yeah. Right?
That's the expensive one.
Or the accidental boo-boo, you know,
right.
the car accident that now ended you in the hospital for a week or whatever it was that, you
right.
know.
Because there's not typically planned accidents, right?
By definition.
Exactly.
How is that even a thing?
Exactly. So let's talk a little bit about.
It's interesting you keep bringing up insurance, though. Is there.
Well, you know what? I'm going to talk about why. I mean, the insurance is all relevant. It's part of a comprehensive plan.
Okay.
Okay. So we're going to unpack a little bit. I've kind of broken plans out into some big groups, and then we'll talk about those. Because, again, if you're listening right now and you're thinking, why is this relevant to me? Look, it's relevant because if you want to go somewhere, if the idea is I don't want to be broke forever, I don't want to have to go to work forever,
right.
or I don't want to, you know.
I want to work for a paycheck, not a paycheck.
Right. I want certain things in life. Okay, then let's figure out how to get there. But you don't do that by accident or waiting for the rich uncle that you didn't know existed all of a sudden, you know, to be like a lotto for you. Okay. So we got to have a strategy.
Right.
And we got to be able to navigate the gauntlet. Okay.
So you're going to help us navigate the gauntlet today?
Yes, but we got to take a break. Okay. So we'll do that. I think. I can't tell if the.
I hear it.
Oh, I'm glad you do. I can't hear it. I'm doing the thing again. All right. So we'll do that. And when we come back, we'll talk more about it. But until then, we got to take a break. This is David Littlejohn.
And Katie Shook.
You're listening to The True Wealth on News Radio 1240.
KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240, KQEN.
No, it's not. Welcome back, gang, to the True Wealth Show on this, tomorrow
is National Podcast Day. Yeah.
Which, reminder, you can catch the rest of the show about on our podcast tomorrow. It'll be at littlejohnfs.com.
It's crazy how long we've been doing podcasts.
Yes.
Like, I mean, well, doing the radio show. I mean, it's been a long time.
Right. And now I want to vote on, should we start live streaming the show? Should the show be live, like on video?
So I think it should, but the components of getting you and me in the same feed and getting it to coordinate and stuff.
We can work it out. We got good people, so that's the thing. If that's what
people,
folks
if
think
you're listening,
do,
our people, if you're listening,
yep, let us know if that's a thing. Like, you know, you should live stream this, because there's a part of me that's ready to, and I'm really considering this regardless of election outcome. I'm really considering kind of walking away from social media. And just keeping our professional site. But the personal side, I'm like, I don't know. I mean, it's nice to keep track of friends, but other than to get birthday reminders anymore, I don't like the toxicity that's out there. It's very interesting. So side note to what we're talking about today. Today we are talking about financial plans.
Right.
Right? And we're trying to demystify these and help you to really wrap your mind around it. If you're going to hire somebody, I want you to know,
what should what you are, be looking you know, for? Like, yeah, what good, are some good interview questions?
Good questions. What are things you should be expecting in a financial plan? Maybe even a little bit about how much should it cost? And so we're going to kind of break some of those down for you. But, you know, just I had some interesting conversations today, and people continue to ask about investing in the upcoming election. And I have a very odd theory right now. Doesn't make it right. Doesn't make this investment advice or anything. But I don't think the market's fooled by what's going on.
I don't think so either. I don't think we're going to see the big hiccup that everybody is anticipating.
You know, if you think about the market kind of got fooled when in 2016, I guess, it was during the
Trump and Hillary
Trump
Clinton.
And Hillary, and Clinton was expected to be a landslide win, and Trump was a big shock, right? And so the markets had to sort of readjust for that, and then they actually went on a pretty immediate rally thereafter for 3 or 4 months where it went up quite a bit after the Trump presidency was the outcome. This is sort of a different deal. First of all, I can't handicap it. What we learned last time is the polls are useless. Okay.
Well, and we've become more and more reluctant to trust media.
Right.
Like, I mean, it's ever since then, there's been more, I don't know, just different.
Well, the exposure's there. If you, everybody, I need to go watch it. This is not probably a lot of new data for me. This is stuff that I've known. But there's a movie on Netflix called The Social Dilemma.
Yeah, everybody keeps telling me to go watch that too.
And it's about how the large data vendors that are somehow, you know,
patrolling stuff.
What they're doing is they are attempting to influence people by what they show you based on your region and what they collect about you. And it's creepy how much they know. As an example, they could pretty well call when somebody's going to get a divorce based on watching their online behavior.
Sorry, I don't mean to giggle. That really sucks. Like, that is an you're kidding me moment. Although, let's be honest, sometimes we can call that based on what people are posting too.
Yeah, but they're accurate. They're quite accurate for timing and so forth. And so, yeah, we've all noticed things like, hey, I'm talking about something, and then it starts showing up in my newsfeed somewhere. I didn't do an internet search, or I didn't do anything like that. I just had a conversation, and some keywords came up, and all of a sudden those things are showing up in my newsfeed. What happened here? Well, there's a lot of influence that's occurring. So, yeah, I agree that I think trust in large mainstream media resources is at an all-time low. I think that editorialism within large media is at an all-time high. I think there's a tremendous amount of political bias on both sides, depending on which team somebody is sort of admitted to playing for. And I can't handicap the outcome of the election because the polls say it's a Biden, you know, win pretty comfortably, like a 10-point lead in the polls. But it was more than
that.
That
doesn't sound like
a mega
lead,
though. It was more than that for Hillary Clinton previously. And here's the thing, though, right? Let's just math out this game. If the polls are right, then the markets should be looking at this and saying, well, we kind of expect that to happen then. So if Biden wins, we've already sort of priced a lot of these expectations in.
Right. So not a whole lot should change.
Right. And if Biden doesn't win, then the market gets to keep doing what it's already been doing, which is it's sort of a known entity in Trump. So either we get the known of the incumbent or the expectation that's already cooked into the market based on the numbers.
Right. So there shouldn't be a lot of jockey between the two because it's kind of figured it out on both sides already.
It doesn't look like when people are saying, well, are we going to have another crash like we did when COVID first happened? I go, well, I don't think we're going to shut everything down anymore.
Right.
In fact, most people have acknowledged that, again, either side of the aisle, there's this sort of giggle about, well, the emphasis on COVID is going to diminish
after the election. Yeah.
Right? I don't know if it really means that.
It doesn't mean that the virus is going to go away. There's no magic wand.
Yeah, like there's no benefit to beating people over the head anymore. We've already got fatigue on the headlines, fatigue on behaviors, and fatigue on trying to make
our
world work
around it. By the way, I'm back in the gym this week, wearing my mask, exercising. I'm like, enough's enough, right? Like, I'm not going to hold out any longer. I'm just going to move on.
So we're there.
Yeah. We've priced it into ourselves, right? We've just gone, this is the way of life. Let's just go deal with it now.
So I'm not trying to tell anybody how to invest, but I'm telling you that I don't think that the market is sort of set up for like a big, whoa, surprise. And the release of the Trump tax thing, I don't think that's a surprise. And I don't think it changed anybody's opinions either. Well, I think everybody's still at the same opinion pre-news versus post-news of, okay, we had another announcement. So,
well, and the funny thing is everybody assumes that the market always gets it right. I mean, remember the Brexit? Like, it wigged out. Like, it anticipated they weren't going to do it. And then they decided to do it. And then it was like, ooh.
Yeah. So, and we did have a pretty good head fake, but then 3 months later, it was fine.
Right.
And that's the part, you know, folks are saying things like foregone conclusions and, you know, oh, if Biden gets in, it's just, we're just electing Kamala Harris and then we're going to have instant tax policy and a Green New Deal and the whole country's going to burn down and there'll be civil war. And I'm like, oh, slow your roll there, dude.
Well, I remember a lot of people promising they'd move out of the U.S.
Yeah,
if
they're going
Trump
to Canada,
won, and
right?
I didn't see anybody leaving. So
I think that there's a lot of rhetoric and there's a lot of folks that are very passionate and there's folks that are angry or if not angry, probably frustrated, right?
Yeah.
Like you probably know people that have different ideologies than you and you don't hate them, but you sometimes hate how venomous they get in the debate when it's not face to face, right?
Right.
The people that are venomous face to face, by the way, they're pretty awful. Like, I mean, if you are that kind of person that can just yell in somebody's face about how you disagree with them, I don't have a lot of time for you. Just saying.
Yeah. Courtesy and manners should make a comeback.
Yeah. Because it's just, let's have
our country's lost
debate,
a little bit of it, right?
But, you know, the assumption, there's this great term in arguing that people should know about. It's called presuppositions.
Oh, right? Interesting.
What you presuppose is true prior to engaging in the conversation. And if your presuppositions are inaccurate, it makes all of the other stuff inaccurate. But if you're too proud to see any different, then you got a problem. So usually what happens is the smarter somebody gets, the less about an issue, right? The smarter somebody, I'm not saying the smart people always do this. I'm saying when you are well informed about an issue, your confidence level tends to drop. Because you realize that the issue is a lot more sophisticated.
I like the term agree to disagree, right? And it, to me, that is a polite way to say, you know what? We're not going to see eye to eye, and that's okay. But we're not going to hate each other for it, right? Agree to disagree. But don't beat up the other person because you don't agree. And I know that's a lot of what you're saying, too. And you're right. There's been times when I've gotten in conversations or debates, but friendly debates, and I'm like, oh, I didn't see it that way. Or I've had a point where they're like, oh, I didn't think about it that way.
Sure.
Right? And there's times when you can. It depends on the approach. Right? And it's not even that there's a right answer. It's just the approach. It's the way your mind processes the data.
Yeah.
Now, how does this work with a financial plan? Because you were talking about the markets and the election.
I don't know that it.
Actually, I know how it ties in.
I mean, okay, we can stretch. Go for it.
Because people are still asking, is my financial plan good? And do I need to change my plan? And they're worried about what the market's going to do with the election.
Well, and I think most people aren't asking about their plan. Again, that's another, it's a good case in point. They're asking about their investments. And then you're sort of conflating the plan with the investments. Investing is part of a plan.
Right.
It's kind of like, well, you know, is my kitchen okay? Well, the kitchen's part of the house. The kitchen isn't the house. Right. And so same way, the investments are part of a plan. It's not the whole plan.
The whole plan. Right.
a financial plan is all about developing a strategy to accomplish specific goals.
Right.
Okay. I mean, that's really in its most simplistic term is, okay, well, a plan is all about, I've got a mission objective. I need to come up with the steps to make that occur. When it comes to your money, there's actually not a hard and fast set codified, this is how you plan. It drives some folks a little nutty that are OCD and want the steps, right?
Is there components that are hard and fast that are part of a plan?
I'm going to say there's big picture topical ideas that are part of every plan. And
okay.
So I want to walk you through some of those, but let me give you a couple examples. Like Dave Ramsey's on this station.
Right.
We talk about him a lot. We've been at one point or another in history, we've been his whatever the provider is.
I know.
The endorsed local provider, right?
Which away from ELPs.
They call
but
it SmartVestor.
SmartVestors.
Right?
I was like, wait, what's the term?
And that has to do with the rules of the financial industry, because when you're a SmartVestor with Dave Ramsey, just let me tell you how it works, right? We had to pay Dave Ramsey to be
We're paying advertising dollars, right.
And what Dave Ramsey did is anybody that came into his system looking for folks that aligned with his methodology, they would then forward on the names of those contacts that requested information to the SmartVestors in the area.
Which is multiple, not one.
Right. It wasn't just one. And then it was like sharks in the water. Everybody would try to communicate with you, go like, oh, are you interested? Are you interested? Because I can be really honest on the radio here. Our business, we are trying to attract new clients. We want to help people to make good financial decisions, and we want to help them with their investments. It's what we do.
Right.
Okay. But I can also be honest enough to say, look, we do that for the folks that it's a great fit and it's right. And if it's you, awesome. If it's not you, we're not going to try to shoehorn you into like a square peg in a round hole.
So the best term I ever heard out of a prospect was financial speed dating. So it feels like financial speed dating. So what you're doing is you're coming in.
The Dave Ramsey thing?
No. I mean, like, so you come in, right? You're trying to figure out, who do I work with as a financial advisor, as a financial planner? And what you do is you sit down. David just mentioned a fit, right? Is it a good fit? So you come in and you sit down and you're listening to the way the firm operates. You're listening to the way the advisor operates. And they're talking kind of about their protocol, right? Like how they do things. And what you're doing as a person who's looking to invest is you're sitting there going, do these align with my values? Does it align with my goals? Like, how does this fit, right? Are we a good fit? It's like financial speed dating. It's like, well, do I like you? Do you like me? Okay, good. Then we can work together.
Right.
And it's, but I kind of laughed because I never equated it to that. But it's kind of what it feels like. I mean, after usually about an hour of sitting together, you're making a big decision with your money. And so it is kind of speed dating. You're trying to get to know as much information about each other as you can in that amount of time to see if you're a good fit for that firm, right? Are you the type of client that the firm is looking for? And is he or she the type of advisor you're looking for? Right?
Yes.
So it's both. It's a fit on both sides. So it's not always like, if I walk in, like you say, in fog of mirror, they're going to take me. That may be true in some firms, but, you know, making sure it's a good fit is super important.
Yeah. And so I'm going to continue to use our Dave Ramsey illustration for a moment.
Sure.
Right? So the SmartVestor program, people that called in like sort of the Dave Ramsey baby steps, right? Baby steps are the initial components of a financial plan, right? It's a practical strategy for how to get out of debt
and save money.
Stabilize yourself so that you are changing habits so that you can then start to make intentional decisions with your money.
Right.
Okay. And I oftentimes would joke behind the scenes and say, well, Dave Ramsey helps people with the baby steps, and then we help him with the grown-up steps.
Right.
Right? So,
and he doesn't really talk much about that. Like,
no,
he says, go invest. And he just says, oh, well, diversify in different styles of mutual funds. But he doesn't say which mutual funds. Right. He doesn't say how much. He just kind of says, go.
And I will – you've probably noticed on this show, we don't talk a lot about specific – investments. And there's good reason for that, and it comes down to investments are highly personal, and because there's a lot of rules associated with giving advice, so we don't want to be perceived as giving specific advice to a person, because if we're going to be fiduciaries, we're
liable for that advice.
So what we're saying is, we talk about concepts that you need to then go and apply personally in your circumstance. So hence the financial plan. Here's where I think we're sort of different. And I say, I think we're different, but I don't sit in other advisors' offices anymore. So I don't know what other firms are doing, but I hear sort of anecdotally the stories from our clients and folks that interact. And if you've ever interviewed a financial professional, let me see if the interaction went something like this. Hello, you know, my name is, a little chit chat to get to know you. And then at some point it pivots to, well, how can I help you? Talk to me about how you're invested now. Oh, here's what we would do differently. And before you know it, it's a conversation about how much money can we convince you to start investing? Or if it's on the insurance side of things, it is, oh, well, we've identified an insurance need and we start pivoting to how are we going to solve the need? Now, when you walk into an insurance office, you kind of expect to get sold insurance.
Right.
When you walk into a financial planner, right, air
right.
quotes, because we know that that term is sort of loose, but you walk into a planner and all of a sudden you're getting sold maybe, oh, well, here's this, have I shown you this annuity product that's got an income guarantee associated with it and it'll be great for retirement? Or, oh, you've got a 401k, well, let's roll that over into an IRA and we can do these investments for you. And you just get into this, yeah, okay. And if you don't ask questions, you may just start nodding yes, and before you know it, you're signing paperwork and you're off to the races.
Or sometimes you don't understand what they're saying, but you don't want to sound dumb. So yeah. You agree anyway, not knowing what they're talking about, and then leave scratching your head going, what did I just agree to? Yeah.
So what we try to do is turn the concept around a little bit before we ever talk about why do we think we're smart and how we invest. And we do think we're smart. We like the way we invest. I mean, I'm not going to lie. We have our own boutique team, and we do things a little different than the big guys, and we do that on purpose, right? We didn't join the big guys. We left because we wanted to do something different. But we really start with hey, Mr. and Mrs. Client, talk to me about what it is that you're looking to do, right? Give me a big picture of what you're all about, what your priorities are, what do you like, what do you not like, and then how can we work with you? And so we start with this idea of, well, the plan comes first, and we need to come up with a strategy, and then we'll figure out how the investments make the strategy go. Make sense?
Yes, it does.
So it's a different take. So I think that's the key, though, is, hey, do you start with, well, let's start with a product, figure out how to,
you fit the product.
Right. Or do you start with, tell me what you're looking to do, and then let's see if we can find things that solve
your problem.
Need.
Yep.
They're very different, right? But anyway, we're running long. We got to grab a break, right? So let's do this. When we come back, if you're wondering about financial plans, you know the big question I'd want to know? How much does it cost?
Very good question.
I want to know what it costs. So we're going to talk about that, but we got to take a break. So stick around. This is Dave Littlejohn.
And Katie Shook.
You got Truewell on News Radio 1240.
KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Hey, gang. Welcome back to the Truewell Show. Reminder, it is National Podcast Day
tomorrow.
Yeah. So you should listen to this whole thing again tomorrow, and you'll find all these hidden Easter eggs in it, right? and if you're just now listening to it, then the Easter eggs are all obvious. You only have to listen to it, I think, 7 times. You get them all.
Really? Is that it? 7?
Yeah, maybe
okay.
8.
Maybe 8.
We're subliminally giving you our phone number. Before the break.
Nine times more?
We wanted to talk about how much should you spend, or what does a financial plan cost?
They can be quite pricey, I think.
Well, they can. And so before we can answer the question, this is like the classic, it happens in the financial world all the time, is like, well, let's figure out what we're paying for.
Okay.
And then we can decide what it costs. So what are we paying for? Because people will invariably, they'll go to like your website. What does it cost? I go, okay, if you're just asking about cost, there's way more variables than you can just say, well, that's what it costs.
Right.
Right. Unless you want to break it down. I mean, like our firm has, we have a price per hour. If you just say, all right, well, let's just sit down. We'll go by the hour, figure it out. When you're done, we'll give you the plan. You walk away and you can execute it yourself.
Which we still don't have a fixed cost. It's not like it's going to be $800.
It's hours. Yeah. How many hours do we spend on it, right?
Depends on how complex your plan is.
So what are the key components to most financial plans?
Well, you got to know what the person's goals are.
Okay. So goals are going to be significant. I mean, because that's really the end outcome, right? So to get to a plan, you better have some mission objectives. So yes, there's definitely goals.
Okay. And you talked about strategy.
Okay. So strategy is going to be what the whole plan is doing.
Okay.
So inventory. What cash. Do we have to work with?
Yeah. How much cash flow?
Yeah. Well, that's a separate item, technically.
So what do we have now and how much money are we planning on dumping into it?
Kind of. So let me walk through the basics here.
Okay.
So first thing is, what have you got to work with? Okay,
right.
So we're going to go on the mission and we have to kind of look. And a few weeks ago, I went on a backpacking trip for several days. The first thing you did was you laid out, what's the gear I need to take? How far am I going from where to where? What do I need to do to make the journey occur as comfortably as possible, as safely as possible, to assure that I get home and I don't starve or, you know, die of thirst or anything weird?
Stupid question.
Yeah.
Did you have a good plan?
Yeah.
Would you alter your plan for the next journey?
Yes.
Why?
Because I learned things.
Ah.
Right? And so I think that plans are, in the financial world, plans by necessity
need to evolve.
They will be pliable, right? They need to have contingencies and flexibility because guess what happens?
Life.
Yeah. And life.
Exclamation point.
Change.
Life, COVID, and fires. Did I miss anything?
Yep. Moving targets. You forgot the mystery seeds.
Oh. Murder hornets. That's what I forgot.
Yes.
And meth alligators.
Meth alligators.
And whales in the Amazon.
Yes. That's not
and
whales.
An election.
Whales.
Whales.
So we start with an inventory, and one of the things you look at is, well, what do you already have?
Okay.
Do you have any investments at all?
IRAs, 401ks.
Do you have a job? Do you have anything? Do you just have a twinkle in your eye and a dream?
And
no
how
motivation?
Old are you?
I don't know. So we're going to look at that. So you look at your assets and your liabilities.
Ah.
Okay. Do you have debts? Credit cards, student loans.
Children.
Do you own things that are actually declining in value? So you went out and bought that nice truck on payments and it's dropping in value as you're pouring more money into those payments.
Ah, true. Okay.
Okay. So we look at assets and liabilities to get a snapshot of your net worth. And then we look at cash flow. How much money are you generating?
And how much are you spending?
Right. Well, the cash flow, that the next thing is the budget, right?
Yes.
So, okay, you've got the cash flow. Where's the money going?
And that's not a dirty word, by the way. The budget is a great thing.
Yeah. And by the way, budgets don't have to be super high detail spreadsheet items. We just need to make sure that are you categorically spending more than you make? Then that program won't work.
Right. Yeah.
Right? Like as they like to say, that dog don't hunt.
Yep.
So you got to know what your cash flow looks like. And then when you have that, what am I working with? What is my cash flow? What are my goals? We start to develop the strategy. Strategy can include things like, what rate of savings and rate of return do I need? You know, maybe it's not what kind of investments I want. Maybe it's what kind of investments do I need, right? I'm really conservative, but I can't afford to be that conservative to make my goals happen.
That's actually a great point, by the way, because sometimes people are like, can you make me 20% a year for the next 20 years?
And take no risk.
And take no risk.
And
lose me no money.
And I'm like, well, could you bring me a unicorn? You know, so.
I could.
Yeah. So there you get the idea, right? Sometimes it's just they're not realistic. So we have to figure out what can we work with given the tools that we have.
That is actually a good point. Really quick. I don't know that people who are not savvy investors, I guess. I mean, I would say people that have never invested before may not understand how much the market fluctuates year to year or what is a normal expected return.
Yeah.
Like when they come in and say, I want to make 30%, like they have no idea that whether or not that's even attainable.
Correct. So that could totally be the case. All relevant to the plan design to also learn as you go. And part of planning is setting proper expectations.
Right.
Okay. Otherwise, I would say, you know, you could make plans that, well, imagine if NASA was really just, you know, we'll just kind of work it out. Space shuttle, we kind of slapped it together. No big deal. that doesn't end well.
No, okay? It doesn't. That ends up with dead people.
And your plans, they're going to evolve, but they're not going to end well if you're going to be sloppy with them. Okay. So there's another category that we really need to think about in the planning, and that is risk.
Okay.
Now, we've talked before on this show about how risk is just the four-letter word of financial industry because it can mean so many different things. But in this case, I'm using the term risk a lot like you think it means. Like, what are the things that could blow up my plan? The COVIDs and the forest fires and, like, what are the risks out there that it's a gotcha?
Yeah. Okay? Big gotchas.
And so
big
the
owies.
Things that could make your plan not work, you start to look at those potentialities. And
it's not a word.
It is today.
Okay. David's making up words now for his word of the day calendar.
So we look at those and can you manage those risks through either behaviors or a risk transfer in the form of insurance or some other structuring that
can we change the plan
risks?
A little bit to reduce the risk.
Okay. So when you get all that done, there's one final thing that you think about.
Okay? There is. I thought we covered all of them already.
We covered just about everything, right? Because we talked about assets and liabilities and getting a net worth picture. We talked about knowing where your goals are and your resources and cash flows to get there. We talked about the risks along the way and the strategies that you're going to deploy to get there.
Okay. So what's left?
The last one is, who gets it if it's not you? Right?
Yes. All right.
Who gets it if it's not you? So... Oh, yeah, the music's playing. You know what that means? Forced break, because we have to do that. So I guess we'll take one more break, because you want to know...
Who gets your money?
Who gets your money, and you want to know how much you're going to spend and set this whole thing up? Final answer when we come back. This is Dave Littlejohn.
And Katie Shook.
Yeah, True Wealth on News Radio 1240.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240, KQEN.
It's crazy.
It's not just price, it's quality too, right?
Well, we talked about that, price versus value, or was it the...
Okay, well, yeah, welcome back to the True Wealth Show. Sorry, we were talking during the break because we're short on time here, and I promised that we were going to get to this. So on National Podcast Day, which is Wednesday, today's Tuesday, but we're pre-celebrating because this will be a podcast
tomorrow.
Right? And you can check it out at...
littlejohnfs.com.
Okay, we're getting our cues down. And how much does a financial plan cost?
I have no idea.
Okay, and that's it for the show. Thank you, everybody. No, look.
As much as you're willing to pay and as much as the guy is willing to charge. I don't know. How much should it be expensive?
Sometimes, literally, what you just said is darn near how some I've seen priced before. I have seen people that sell financial plans for anywhere from $10,000 to $20,000.
Oh.
And, I'm not going to say that there wasn't value delivered, but I will tell you that financial plans, I have a different philosophy than many because I believe that we have a lot of moving parts. Financial plans that get into a lot of sophistication and strategy, and that means things like, hey, we need to look into under the hood of a business and help you to work through the cash flows of the business and where things are moving, coordinating with your CPA, coordinating an estate plan with your attorney, and getting into not just the investment plans, but comprehensive insurance reviews. I'm like, really, really
fine-tuned
stuff.
So all the stuff you said makes me think someone that has a lot of money and a lot of assets and a lot of moving parts.
Well, Yeah. And that's where I'm going to get to. It's like, if you've got a, you know, $25+ million net worth and assets coming out the wazoo, then you probably can justify having a pretty sophisticated financial plan. My question is, what do you do with it?
And how hard is it to deploy?
Right. I mean, because if I sell you a plan by the pound, and
oh,
you know,
my goodness.
You get, and you know, we could easily, and this is scary, right? I can easily produce 80 to 100 pages for an average person of just data dump.
Right.
Easily. Okay. Probably way more than that if we wanted to. But so coming up with 100 pages, not hard.
No.
To do just between disclosure and graphs and things, we can make lots of pretty pictures.
Right.
And we could tell you, see how intimidating this is. It costs a lot and we're smart. And you look at it and your eyes roll back in your head. You don't know what to do with it. Okay.
True.
So you just kind of walk away going, why did I do that? And I think that that is silly.
I feel like some people stop there. They stop before they get to the deployment plan. Like,
yeah.
They give you the idea. It's like, okay, here's the mission. And you're like, great. No deployment.
Right. And so the deployment is a big part of it is, you know, do you execute the plan? You have a strategy or you're going to go do it. And so I like plans that are broken down into steps that are understandable. Things like invest this much per month in these categories and make sure that you can afford it within your cash flow, right? That's the other thing is if I do your plan only with goals but not with any cash flow considerations, hey, you want to put your kids through college? Great. Put $1,700 a month away for all three of them. And
yeah.
You go,
I don't have $1,700
right,
a month.
That's not going to work. So it has to be a realistic and achievable plan that's sort of grounded in your reality.
Right.
How does it get priced? The answer is it depends on the organization. Some price it by the hour. Some do flat rate pricing, much like a contractor making a bid on something. Others do it as a percentage of a number.
How do we do it?
So it varies depending on the sophistication of the client. Typically speaking, for what I will call sort of a napkin plan, which is a relatively high level.
Yeah, a plan light.
It often gets built into, for a lot of our clients that are closer to retirement, they're trying to make sure they're doing it right. It's a value add that comes with the asset management fees they're already paying us.
Got it.
Right. For folks that are getting started, you know, base rate's about $300. It kind of goes up from there on a price per hour. And we usually, our goal is to deliver more value than it costs.
Right. And we're upfront with like, well, we think, we even give estimates. Like, well, we think it'll be about this much, but.
Yeah, it's not, you know, I would say typically financial plans are, you know, a decent working plan that you can do something with under $1,000, probably well under for most people. We're probably talking $300 to $600 for most people if you were doing nothing else with us but walking in the door for that. And
some of that's mitigated if we work together.
That's just the market that we work in, though, right?
Right.
I mean, suppose if we were in a Chicago or something, we'd charge more. It's actually the content's not less valuable. I promise it's not. We could sell it for a lot more than we do. I think we just really like people.
Aww.
That's what happens. Aww,
there's David's warm and fuzzy.
So anyway, and I want to see more people get on the right track. I mean, I will beat the desk on this one and say, look, the American dream is not dead. I don't care who wins the election. I don't care what your opinion is about. It's not dead, right? There's still tons of opportunities out there. You just have to utilize the resources available and start early. You know, don't defer gratification or don't defer execution on this. Get started now.
Now. And teach your kids.
Yes. All right, we're out of time. So, until next time, podcast at littlejohnfs.com. Call us at
541-375-0898.
And we'll catch you next time. This has been David Littlejohn.
And Katie Shook.
You've been listening to True Wealth on News Radio 1240.
KQEN.
The preceding program was paid for by Littlejohn Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.